The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Inside the Huddle. It's our post-game show for Indiana's victory over Western Kentucky. The Hoosiers pulled out a close one again, 38-35, come from behind victory, another shutout in the third quarter. And it has been a really exciting season going back and forth. And we'll see what we're doing, and we'll talk about the win. We'll have Nick Holmes and TJ Inman in. TJ, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Sammy. Thanks again for having me on.
No problem. Anytime. It was an exciting win yesterday. The wheels kind of fell off the bus there with about 5 minutes to go in the first half. But again, whether it's the Swedish fish or some type of magic or whatever coaching is going on in the locker room at halftime, it seems to be working. Indiana went on a 21-0 run to take control of that game.
Yeah, I'm not, like you said, we don't know what's happening at halftime, but there is no doubt that right now the strong point of this team is the third quarter. Whatever's happening in the locker room is really working through three games. I know that you don't want to turn it into a habit of, I wouldn't say they're starting slow, but I would say the first half have tended to kind of deteriorate. Like you said, the wheels fell off the bus there towards the end of that first half, and that's kind of a theme. I mean, they kind of dragged down a bit against the FIU in the first half after a okay start. The second quarter against Southern Illinois was really bad. I mean, the first half overall was bad in that one. But, the third quarter so far have been really good. If you just take the third quarter of those three games, IU looks like a top 10 team just in those third quarters. But as we know, it's not a 15-minute football game. It's a 60-minute football game. So I think one of the keys for next week as we move forward is going to be kind of turning that third quarter or second half effort into a total 60-minute effort. Because that's what's a little bit frustrating is you see how this defense played in that second half, still gave up some yards, but it was miles better than the first half. You see that they're capable of it, and it just makes those first halves all the more frustrating. But overall, IU beat a good football team. Western Kentucky is probably going to win 9 or 10 games this year. So it's a really big win, undoubtedly the biggest win that they've had this season. 3-0 is nothing to sneeze at, and there's a lot of Big Ten teams that would trade places with IU right now.
Yeah, 3-0, it's their first 3-0 start since 2010, which was Bill Lynch's final year. They haven't started 4-0 since 1990, so it was a big win. There was a good crowd. It wasn't a great crowd, but it was a good crowd on a perfect Saturday. The first half, Nick, let's go over that first half a little bit. We were both there. What did you see that was good, and what did you see that, was not so good?
You know, I think people were quick to criticize the defense even before they had really – had that short struggle right before halftime. You know, it was only 14-7 at one point, and people were ready, to jump back on the defense stinks bus. But it wasn't a great first half. But if it weren't for those two late drives of 75 yards, three plays and two plays, it wasn't a terrible half. There was a little frustration relating to maybe the IU's offensive drive sputtering once they got within field goal range. That was an issue. But like you guys just mentioned, that it's that third quarter. Both you and I, Sammy, we were joking with about 20 seconds in the quarter, I said, please, can we just make it out of this quarter without WKU scoring? And about that time, Angeri got his big mitts up on the field goal and kept that streak going.
Yeah, that was, you know, like I said, it was that third quarter mojo they had going that they looked like it was a pretty, I think it was a short field goal attempt. It was probably around 40 yards, and Mangieri blocked it, and he blocked it pretty solidly because you could hear it through the windows up in the press box. But, yeah, that first quarter, the offense kind of, you know, other than Mitchell Page's 91-yard punt return, which was it's great to see that they had punt, you know, some big explosion plays on special teams. It's curious to see maybe they move Mitchell Page also onto the kickoff return team game to kind of get that going. But other than that, you know, they had the broken play to Ricky Jones that went for a touchdown. But that off the Indiana offense really struggled in the first half. Sudfeld killed the scoring drive when he ran with the ball and it took a funky bounce off his hip and he fumbled it away. He skipped the pass in. I know Sudfeld's numbers were pretty good. You know, 20, I think he was 20 for 27 for 355 yards and three touchdowns, which is, they're outstanding numbers, but there are plays, you know, inside the play that he missed. There was a fourth and five to Simi Cobbs, who was open, and he bounces the throw. Whether Simi ran the route a little too long is anybody's guess, but he bounced that throw in there. It's a throw that they have to make. There was another fourth down play where he threw it over the head. I forgot who the receiver was, but he threw it out of bounds over the head of the receiver. I think it was one of the running backs. But
it was Howard.
Yeah, and it could have been a pass interference call, but he threw it so far over that they ruled it uncatchable. And then there was another play. It might have been the play before where it was to Cassaro, fade in the end zone. And, you know, he just overthrew that and missed a wide-open guy across the middle. So, you know, Sudfeld, he was very solid. And I don't want to, you know, people have said I've been picking on him. But, you know, his expectations are so high that he's got to be able to make those reads and check down. He did a better job of checking down the tight ends and running backs yesterday, but he can't just lock in on a guy, and he has to make the throws, even though, you know, I think he got crushed on one of those throws. But he's got to make that five-yard throw to Cobbs. But he made throws when they needed it. There was a third and nine on that final drive. It was one of the tight ends. Corsaro down there to get the first down. That was huge.
You know, I pointed out, I'm getting ready to post a piece in a little bit, and you know, for the second straight week, he's done a really good job of dispersing the ball between multiple receivers. He got nine guys involved in the passing game. All four tight ends caught a reception, I think for a total of, it was like maybe six receptions for 92 yards. I'd have to go back and redo the math. But I think that, you know, says a lot about, you know, the depth of this group. Yeah, we may not have one superstar, although Ricky Jones is looking pretty good so far the first 3 weeks. But I think that right there kind of shows his development, the fact that he is comfortable going through his progressions, finding different guys that maybe he hadn't targeted in years past.
I thought Nate had a uneven first half. There were certainly parts of it that were very good, but I think he'd be the first to tell you that he was a part of them leaving some points on the board in the first half. You went through and mentioned what some of those things were. The second half, I thought he was probably about as good as you could expect. He'll probably play a better half at some point this year, but that was considering what IU needed from him yesterday to get the win in the second half. I thought that he was very efficient. I thought his decision making in the second half was really good. Like you said, Nick, the ball distribution, very good. I love the way that they're using the tight ends. I hope that that continues and maybe even increases some, because I think those guys are proving to be, number one, very sure-handed, number two, the offense is good at getting them into open spaces. And number three, they're doing a pretty good job of getting yards after the catch on kind of safe passes. A lot of the throws that are being made to the tight ends are of the 5 to 10 yard variety, where the tight end is able to kind of pick up another 5 to 10 yards afterwards just by turning and rumbling, I guess, would be the best way to describe what most of them do, especially Cooper and Friend and Corsaro. Those guys are tough to bring down in the open field, so I hope that continues. But I was very impressed with the wide receivers yesterday. I can't really think of too many mistakes they made. The only one that really stands out to me would be Simi Cobbs did not come back for that fourth down pass as much as I'd like. I thought that he kind of just sat, which, I mean, that play was on Sudfeld. I mean, that was a short arm throw, but I thought Cobbs could have come back a little bit better for that. But I don't know, like you said, Sammy, that he could have run the route exactly as he was supposed to and been exactly where he was supposed to be. Who knows? But overall, the wide receivers, I thought, played a tremendous game. The tight ends played a really good game. And since we're talking about the offense, let's talk about the running game, which was tremendous. I mean, Jordan Howard now leads the nation in rushing, which not per game average, but total. I think that Leonard Fournette is probably going to catch him once he plays the same number of games. But Howard is extremely impressive. We had high expectations for him coming in, and I would say that it's safe to, at least for me, he has met those expectations and then exceeded them greatly. I mean, he's such a hard runner, really delivers punishment to anybody that's trying to bring him down. I've been really impressed with him. And Divine Redding, I thought that Redding had a bit of a rough first half. I don't think he played very well. But the second half, he did a really good job of chipping in. He got a couple of runs around to the outside where he got the edge. So I thought Redding ended up having a nice game in the rushing attack. Just did a tremendous job of moving the chains, picking up big chunks of yardage. And on that final drive, when it was pretty obvious to every IU fan that we can't get the ball back to Western Kentucky because bad things will happen, the rushing attack just made sure that the Hilltoppers are not going to get the ball back and this game's over. And it was really impressive. And, when we were talking about the first half, one of the things that I think needs to be said is that the offense did not help the defense out in the first half. There were a lot of kind of quick drives by IU to put that defense back out onto the field. And I thought in the second half they did a much better job of controlling the tempo, controlling the time of possession. I don't have it in front of me, but I'd be willing to bet that IU had the ball quite a bit more in the second half than they did in the first half. And that really helps the defense, number one, stay fresh. Number two, they can't give up yards if they're not on the field. There's no doubt the defense played better, but the offense did its part, and we talked about it in the pregame, of controlling the tempo, and I was really happy to see that in the second half. Great play calling, in my opinion, and great execution by the offense to just keep that ball and keep the Western Kentucky offense where they can't hurt you.
You're exactly spot on about the time of possession in that third and fourth quarter, but most notably to me is I was going through the stats last night, and you probably noticed this too, Sammy. Western Kentucky only had one possession in that fourth quarter. And, IU got the ball late in the third. They didn't score on that next possession, but they still had it for over 5 minutes. Western Kentucky got the ball back, went down, scored seven. And, what teams have done to us in the past, they ran the ball, they ran the clock down, and we never got another shot to put more points up on the board. And I loved seeing that last night. From a development of this program standpoint, the fact that they were able to do that, melt the clock away, never even give Western Kentucky another chance.
Yeah, that was something, I've only been watching IU football now for probably since 2002, being from New York. But that was the first time where they actually, in a one-possession game, you weren't sitting there going – holding your breath and waiting for a defense to stop or you know, waiting for that offense to score. So it was nice to see the offense grind it out, get down inside, you know, the goal line and get those big first downs and just run out the clock. I mean, if Wilson alluded in the postgame presser that they were trying to score. They didn't go conservative. The strength was the running game, and that's what they stuck to. And it was one of our keys to the game as well. I think IU ran the ball, the stats say, 59 times for 295 yards. Outstanding job by Jordan Howard, who Leonard Fournette, if he plays 12 games, is going to catch up to him just because he's a beast as well. But, you know, Jordan Howard, he's not Tevin Coleman, and that's fine because he's averaged 6.5 yards a carry last night, and it was just grind it out, get first downs. And it's something, you know, we said there might be more of a power run game. Well, that's it. The strength lies in the offensive line in that running game, and you saw the offense. The offense that IU needs to have is what they did in that final drive. You know, 6-yard run, 5-yard run, 6-yard run, play action pass for 12 yards. And if they do that, they'll be just fine. And that it was very encouraging to see them grind out that clock at the end of the game there.
Yeah. Does anybody want to talk about the defensive hero of the game, the guy that really turned things around, Jonathan Crawford? I mean, we can talk about his potential, which is sky high, but I don't know, you know, we can, Nick, if you want to talk about just what Jonathan Crawford was able to do with those two interceptions to turn this game around and what a playmaker could mean potentially for this IU defense the rest of the season.
Yeah, before you start, Nick, I wish we had, you know, a heads up on how good this guy would be. You know, if somebody would just text us every so often about Jonathan Crawford, I mean, we would have known. Anyway, you know, Lyndon, you're right, TJ. Lyndon did point it out to us, and
absolutely,
he was the star of the defense there. So thank you, Lyndon, for giving us a heads up on Crawford and Hale. Nick, go ahead with your answer.
You know, you're absolutely right. We needed a ball hawk in the secondary, and Jamel Cook shined last week, and Jonathan Crawford has shined in every game so far. I don't know how many tackles he has on the season, but he's been in on a lot of plays. He's broken up some passes, and yesterday, like you said, back-to-back West Kentucky plays, he picks them off, and both times led to touchdowns. So on three consecutive possessions out of the gate in the second half, 21 points. Had that first touchdown, two picks, two more touchdowns, and that really turned the tide of the game in the favor of the Hoosiers. He's only a freshman, so who knows what to expect over the next couple of years once he starts developing even more physically and his football IQ continues to grow as he gets more comfortable in this defensive scheme. But, yeah, it's really exciting considering the amount of turmoil that we had in the secondary with guys graduating, guys transferring or leaving early, and guys getting kicked off the team for unmentionable illegal actions. It's just nice to have players step up and play at a level that, even no matter how much Lyndon was telling us, I wasn't expecting quite this big of an impact this fast.
No, I don't think anybody could have expected the game-changing ability that Jonathan Crawford has brought. I think that we were all impressed by the way that he physically looks. I mean, he looks like a big-time D1 safety, and I think we're all impressed by his athleticism, but I'm impressed by his playmaking instincts. And Lyndon mentioned that to us, was the instincts that he has, and it's obvious. I mean, he knows where to be. He's got a nose for the ball. And I think what separates him from what we've seen sometimes from IU secondaries in the past, he gets in position and then he makes the play. Whether it's a tackle or catching the ball. And that second interception, I mean, that was just being in the right place and Dowdy making a mistake, maybe rattled by his first pick or just forcing it because of IU's offense being as successful as it was at that time. But that was just a good read by Crawford, and then all he had to do was catch it. The first one, that was a good read, really good athleticism, and then a really good catch. So And it, I mean, that took, that occurred at, what, the 15 or something like that, that really took points straight off the board from Western Kentucky. Because there's no doubt in my mind that they were going to score that drive if IU didn't force that turnover.
That was my turning point of the game there, TJ. I believe that they threw the ball from about the 26, and he picked it off at the 3. They looked like they're going to go in and re-increase that lead to 10 points. I think it was 31-28 at the time, or something along those lines. It was 28-24.
Okay.
Something like that. But they were going to go up and increase their lead or get it back. And it just really flipped the script. It made Doughty look human after being superhuman the whole day. And maybe it put a little belief into these DBs who got torched early. And what Wilson said and what we also said in our keys to the game was, you know, play the next play. Because this team is good. They're a very, very good offensive team. And maybe people still don't realize it because, look, they gave up 600 and something, but this offense was awesome. And so it's play the next play, and they did that, and they came back and got two big picks on two plays in a row and got 14 points out of it. So they started three true freshmen in the secondary, IU did, and you have a six-year quarterback. So you got to cut these guys a little bit of slack. But, you know, they rebounded nicely and had that third quarter magic going.
Go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say you're exactly right. Coach Wilson said after the game, you know, in this day and age of offenses, you're going to give up points, you're going to give up yards. And it all comes down to, can you make the big play when you need the big play? And this is the third week in a row that we've had a true freshman defensive back make a big play when it mattered most. Now, you can say that the Southern Illinois tight end dropped the two-point conversion. That's neither here nor there. You know, Jamel Cook made the play last week. Crawford made both the plays this week. You're not going to keep teams from moving the ball on you, at least not yet. It's just all about taking advantage of opportunities, whether the team puts the ball on the ground, makes a poor throw. Last weekend they had three turnovers, and we scored 21 points off of those, or 20 points off of those turnovers. So they're not going to be perfect. I think it's just all about creating opportunities for our offense to cash in.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. If somebody told us at the beginning of the year that IU would hold Western Kentucky to 35 points, I think everybody would sign up for it. That's the bottom line. So they're 2-0.
I think it's too early to say that this can be a kind of a, you know, the cliche is the bend but don't break defense. I don't think we can say that because they are breaking quite often still. And I think the biggest thing that they're going to want to focus on is limiting those big plays because what that does is it, one, prevents the number of times that the opposing offense can mess up. I mean, it's really hard for teams at any level, especially at college, when an offense isn't really good, it's hard for them to sustain drives over an extended period of time. And if you give up a big play through a busted coverage or poor tackling or whatever, if you give up a big scoring play, obviously they don't have to worry about sustaining drives. But two, it takes away your opportunities to make those plays that can be game changers, like forcing turnovers. So I think it's still too early to say they're a bend but don't break defense, which we'd all take happily if they ended up into that. But I do think that you're starting to see that this defense, while they are still giving up points, they all are still giving up yardage. This defense, it appears, has more of an ability than we've seen in the past to make those big plays, like interceptions turned into scores or forcing fumbles. And if that can continue, I think it's a real positive just looking at the rest of the schedule, because if this offense stays healthy, which there's no reason to think that they won't, if the offense stays healthy, and continues to execute like they are, I really like IU's chances against the offenses we're going against, because I've watched a lot of them. You guys have watched a lot of them. There's not a ton of great offenses left on IU's schedule. There's some, but there's not a ton of them. And I think that there are a lot of opportunities that IU has set themselves up for with this 3-0 start.
Yeah, and you know, the most important thing is 3-0. We all read that article last week where IU was 2-0 and had the smallest margin of victory. But to quote Urban Meyer, IU is 3-0 with a chance to go 4-0, and that's all that matters. And you know, coaches will go back and look on tape and clean things up, and they'll have to get past this win and not overlook Wake Forest, who's, you know, didn't look superly impressive against Army, and lost to a Syracuse team who lost their starting quarterback. But, you know, it's still a road team, road game against a Power 5 team, and a game that IU needs to get. You have to start the season 4-0 when you have the chance to. And then you could start, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but then you could start talking about Ohio State October 3rd. And then you could start getting on the Dan Dockage bandwagon of getting game day to Bloomington. And then you could start, you know, then the dreams start happening. So they'll have their work cut out for them against a good Wake Forest defense. It might not be the best Wake Forest team, but that defense will present some challenges. They're 3-0 for the first time since 2010. Chance to go 4-0 for the first time since 1990. So they're IU's doing things that they haven't done. You know, it's been 5 years since they've been 3-0, and it's been, you know, almost 25 years since they've been 4-0. So they're doing things that haven't been done in a while, and fans should be excited. We'll be back on Wednesday. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I think a lot of people were really frustrated after week one's close victory over Southern Illinois, and even last week's win left a lot to be desired for some fans. But I don't think, and you guys can agree or disagree with me on this, I don't think IU is as comfortable in the situation that they were in yesterday if it weren't for those two games prior to begin the season.
Agreed. No, you're exactly right, Nick. And I keep telling myself, I've probably told you guys, these are games that Indiana loses in the past. Illinois, you know, down 20 or 11 points at halftime against Southern Illinois, IU loses that game in the past. Down another 11 points, I think, at half to FIU, they're losing. Down again at halftime big at Western Kentucky. I mean, it could easily be an 0-3 start. But you got to take something. They've won these games. And maybe now that they're a more senior team with more veteran players and maturity, and Coach Wilson keeps banging the message home that they have absolute buy-in. The guys they have now are their guys. And it's their team, and it's full steam ahead. So, you know, you could nitpick all you want about how, you know, bad the defense looked, or, you know, how the small the winning margin is. The bottom line is they're 3-0, and they're halfway to a bowl game right now with nine games to play. So you're through the quarter of the season. Your first quarter is you passed the test. Now you move on to the second quarter where you have Wake Forest, Ohio State, and Penn State, and we'll see what they do through those first six games. If they win at Wake Forest, there's a very good chance that they could get really rolling. So, guys, thanks for jumping on a Sunday. Enjoy the rest of the night of NFL football. Tevin scored his first touchdown today, but was, I think, limited in the second half with an injury. We'll see you next week, or we'll talk to you Wednesday to preview Wake Forest. Thanks for jumping on, Nick and TJ.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Things aren't perfect, but this is a lot of fun, and 3-0 is a lot better than anything else they could be right now.
It's sure better than 0-3, or 1-2, or 2-1. But anyway, we'll be back Wednesday morning with our pregame show for Wake Forest. Download it. Keep coming back to HoosierHuddle.com. We have lots of wrap-up pieces
still to come. We have a lot of preview pieces for Wake Forest, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.